Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak tonight. I know some of you probably would prefer to be out trick-or-treating, so I appreciate you being here. All right, so I'm going to tell you what it was like. I was born in Georgia, about northwest of Atlanta. I am 33 years old, and I'm gay. And growing up in the South as a black man, black person, and being gay was very difficult. I came from a very poor family. We grew up in the projects, and so we didn't have much. And my mom, she had three children, myself and my younger brother and my younger sister, and she was married. And I was the caregiver of everyone in the house. It was my responsibility to make sure everyone had their needs and wants met. And it was dysfunctional. I didn't know it was dysfunctional until I got into recovery 3 years ago when I joined Codependence Anonymous. And so during that process of getting clear about my history, I realized a lot of different things. One, my stepfather was an alcoholic, and I tried very hard to not become an addict, and here I am today telling you that I am an addict. You can't run from it. I didn't run from it. I just didn't want to face it. My mom, she was a caretaker of her siblings, and so what I've learned from that is that it does, we pass it on. You know, I got it from my family, and what I hope to do by sharing my story is prevent myself from passing my codependence and my addictions down to my children when I have children. So I'll talk a little bit about my mom. My mom is a caretaker of her siblings. I recently learned in the last year that she witnessed her mother having an affair in their household growing up. And I didn't know this, but my grandmother and the man that she eventually left my grandfather for continued seeing one another up until my grandmother's death several years ago. And I didn't understand why my mom hated the guy that she was in a relationship with. I know now why, because he was the person that broke up her family. And that was something that she had to sit with. And while she was sitting with that, she also had to be a parent to her younger siblings. And so I think that caused a lot of harm, and I think it gave her wrong messages about what relationships look like, because she set off on a path of being in destructive, dysfunctional relationships. When she was married, I think she got married when I was about 6 years old, and I remember leaving the wedding. They had it at my grandfather's house, and I knew from a very young age that my mom and my, at the time, her boyfriend or fiance were dysfunctional for one another. They fought, they cussed, you know, a lot of violence in the relationship. And so when she told me she was getting married, I did not like that at all. And so the day of the wedding, I actually ran out of the ceremony. And I think I was about six. So at 6 years old, here I was declaring that I didn't even approve of her relationship. And she continued on with the wedding. And other people had to come see about me. And that's how the rest of our relationship has looked. You know, it's been other people taking responsibility for me because she's been too preoccupied with herself or others. And I now know that she's in a lot of pain. She was in a lot of pain, and so I can now have some compassion for her because I have done the same thing. So talking more about the abuse, there was domestic violence. It seemed to happen every day. I imagine that probably is not true, but for a child, that was my reality. You know, I would go to school knowing that I would go home to violence. And with my stepfather being an alcoholic, he was not present, not emotionally available, and it was harmful to me and my siblings. There were times we would come home and he would be passed out on the floor, drunk and naked. So here we were, children being exposed to sexuality so soon, not knowing, you know, what questions to ask, if it was appropriate to ask questions at all about why our dad or stepfather was naked in our floor, you know. And so that was hard to take. And as I got older, I started voicing my opinions about that. I would tell my mom that I didn't want to be in the household with her or him. I didn't care for them and the violence that we had to deal with. And I usually got hit for it. Whenever I spoke my truth, I got punished for it, even if it was the truth. And I think it was hard for her to stomach that. So my mom was definitely unavailable. She was emotionally unavailable, physically unavailable. And she worked a lot. She had about 3 jobs at one time. And she even had us children going with her to one of her jobs to clean commercial offices. So I started working at a very young age. And I told someone today at another meeting that I actually had to work to buy my own toys. So, and I thought about that. I was like, wow, that really is messed up. So my stepfather, alcoholic, didn't really work. If it rained outside, he wouldn't go to work because he worked in construction. So he always had a reason. In Georgia, it rains a lot, more than Seattle. So that was a common theme for him. And so we suffered financially, lived in the projects, were on food stamps, and you know, we often didn't know what we were going to eat or when we were going to eat. And so we would go to food banks and have people bring food to us. You know, at Christmas, people from churches would like bring us gifts, and I would end up re-gifting my gifts to my siblings. And so there were times where I probably didn't get anything but clothes. And so that's what I came to accept. But I wanted to make sure that my sister and my brother were taken care of. They were like my children. And I tell people now that I raised them. I raised my sister and my brother. My dad was 17 years old when my mom had me. My mom was 20. So my dad was still in high school, and I was his second child. His first child came when he was 15. And my mother wanted a relationship with this man that was unavailable. And I think that from what I've learned about their relationship, it was very codependent, dysfunctional. He wanted to be a teenager in high school, and she wanted him to play house. And so he was unable to do that. And so she often tried to break up his relationships with other women, and that caused him to have some dysfunction. And my dad told me last year that she actually had some friends of hers come to one of his basketball games to threaten him because he wasn't, according to her, showing up for me. And that was something I heard a lot from my mom. Your dad doesn't pay child support. He's not here taking care of you. He was abusive towards me, and he doesn't care. But when it came down to needing money, it was my job to try to seek that from him. An example of that was in second grade, heading into third grade, I went to where he was living in Florida to find out what his address was so she could report it to the Child Support Department. So as soon as I got into the home, I called her up, read the piece of mail that had the address on it, and said, here he is. So that's how she got the child support started. But I had to stay the whole summer, and I was miserable because my dad was not present. He didn't know how to be present. He once told me that he didn't know how to be a father, and I thought it was bullshit. But now I know that that's true. He didn't know how to be a father. His mom was an alcoholic. His dad, was a sex addict. He has over 20 children. And my dad just recently, I think met the last one. So he doesn't even have a really close relationship with his own siblings. And my dad had a total of six kids. And the only two that he has raised are the two that are currently living in his house. And I'm grateful that he's actually stepping up as a father and taking care of those two, because I get to see that he actually can be a good father. And he tries his best to show up for me. Yeah, I had my belly button birthday this month, and he posted a happy birthday on Facebook. So, but his birthday was 2 days later, and I actually called him because I'm trying to do things differently. And so whether he wants to do it or not is up to him, but I'm making a decision to do things differently. Let's see. I also learned that my dad took care of his grandmother when he was a kid, and that was something that I did too as a child. My great-grandmother, I took care of her, moved in with her to help her out. And so he and I had a lot of things in common, and I didn't know all of this until a few years ago, that we basically lived the same life. And he did the best he could do. And so did my mom. And my stepfather probably did the same thing. My stepfather and my mom finally got a divorce. And when she got a divorce, she immediately hooked up with someone that was in jail. Now, you might wonder how you hook up with someone who's in jail. Well, you know someone who knows someone who's in jail, and you go with them to visit. And that's how that happens. And so this man made promises to her, said that he was going to get her out of debt, and he was going to take care of the kids. And she's still in a semi-relationship with him, but throughout the, I think, last 20 years, they have had very chaotic relationship. He got her involved in drugs, and my sister and my brother moved out from her care, and my aunt had to take care of them. And at one point, I took care of my brother, and this is when I was in my early 20s. I had to take care of him again because she was not available and she was on drugs. And I actually tried to hold her accountable for her actions because I reported her because she was getting government assistance to take care of the kids that were not living in her house. And I was a 20-something-year-old college student, had a job, and I was taking care of a teenager and was not given any resources. And so I had to do that. Some messages that I learned as a child in my family, I'm only good enough to take care of others. When I need something, I will need to figure it out myself. My family was not available to discuss school struggles. My mom was not available to hear about my progress in school. She did not show up to meetings with my teachers. And so for me, I was in a lot of pain. And with pain, I sought out numbing. And for me, attention from others was numbing. And so I actually began having a sexual relationship with individuals around my age in my neighborhood in elementary school. I don't even know when I lost my virginity. I have no idea. Don't remember. But I do know that I had a sexual relationship in elementary school for several years, and my mom found out about it, and the first question was, who touched you? At that time, no one had touched me, but that was the only discussion we had about it. What I assumed from that conversation was that what we were doing was wrong and that it was not okay to like boys and so keep everything a secret. So I grew up keeping my sexuality a secret until I was 15 years old, and I was living with my grandmother at the time, and I told my mom I needed to talk to her about something important. And the reason I wanted to talk to her about it at this time was because I knew I was going to get found out, because I had stumbled on to online porn, and older gentlemen were sending me pictures in the mail and sending me emails and things of that nature, and it was on my grandfather's computer. And at the time, I knew nothing about blocking software, pop-ups, none of that stuff. I was in high school. And so I knew I needed to say something, and so I called her over. I called her on the phone. I said, I need to talk to you. And she said, what is it about? I said, it's important. What is it about? We went back and forth like that for a while, and she kept asking questions. Is it about a girl? No. Is it about a boy? Yes. Are you gay? Yes. She showed up in 15 minutes. So she came in the house crying, and I told her, and I was wondering, I was like, why are you crying? I've spent years crying. Why are you crying? And she told my grandmother that I was gay. My grandmother says, how do you know? Well, I didn't tell her that I knew because I was already having sex. I just said I did know. And their answer was to send me to a therapist, because what I got from that was, there's something wrong with you, and that I needed to go to church. Even though my family, Baptist family, not everyone went to church. But whenever someone did something wrong, they needed to go to church. So I didn't go to church. So what I believe, what message I got from this was that I would never be loved if everyone knew I was gay. I needed to hide. My truth was always a lie. And being gay, black, and poor equaled no way out. That was the message. And soon after, my grandmother learned that I was gay. I was 15 at the time. She asked me to leave her home. And when she asked me to leave her home, I didn't know where else to go. So I'm on the phone. I'm 15. I'm calling people. Can I come stay with you? And I found someone to stay with, but it wouldn't be until the next school year, until the summer was over and fall would start. And my great aunt said, sure, you can come stay with me. No one told her why I was coming to stay with her, and neither did I until, I don't know, about a year ago. She didn't know. I told her the story. I wanted to graduate from the school that my mom graduated from, because even then I had to lie. So during that summer, I was asked to leave. I went to stay with my great-grandmother temporarily, and at my great-grandmother's house, I became a target. I became a target to a child molester, and the child molester happened to be my dad's best friend. So this was someone that I had known, someone that I felt comfortable with, and he set out to groom me, and he did that summer, and we had a sexual relationship, as what I called it, and I thought it was normal. I thought it was okay. I even asked him if he would leave his wife for me. I thought I was in love. And I was hurt when I had to leave that summer. I thought life was going to be over because the man I loved, the man that said he would protect me, couldn't go with me. I didn't know until I walked into an SLA meeting October of 3 years ago that was not a relationship, that was a molestation. And it was during a meeting, at the noon meeting, where it just hit me that what I had gone through was molestation. But I didn't know it at the time, and so there was a lot of sneaking around, hiding out, lots of things that were just really awful. And I didn't know that the people that I met after him were also molesting me, because I was only 15 and they were adults. And I don't remember how many people that was. It was several. So I was on a path, a very destructive path of having sex with people my age, but mostly being molested by men older than me. And I got into my junior year of high school, and I met someone who was my age, and at the time what I didn't realize was that the man who molested me was actually encouraging me to groom this other person. And this other person and I had a sexual relationship, but we were maybe 2 years apart. And that relationship was very chaotic, very dramatic. It's like a soap opera for teenagers. And I didn't learn what a healthy relationship was like. I didn't have any idea what it looked like. I had no examples whatsoever. The only thing I knew was that my great-grandparents had got together when my great-grandmother was maybe 15 and my great-grandfather was maybe 18, and they stayed married until they died. That's what I knew, right? But here I was trying to figure out a relationship with someone my own age and couldn't. It was a hot mess. It really was. To the point where I confronted his family when they tried to separate us. So at the time I was 16, his father found out that he and I were having a relationship and they came to take him away. This was what I believed to be the person who was the love of my life, you know. And his father came to take him away from me. And I was so obsessed with him and so in love with him that I was willing to fight this boy's father for him. Didn't work out well. But they did take him away, and he did try to stay away from me. And we're still friends to this day. We managed to salvage a friendship out of it. So here I was, completely dysfunctional, not knowing what a relationship looked like, not understanding how to establish boundaries, not understanding my worth, feeling like shit. And as I was feeling all that shame and pain and guilt and anger, I was fed up and wanted to take my life. And there were periods of times where I wanted to kill myself, and I'm grateful that I did not and that I was not successful. I thank therapy for that. I had a very very awesome therapist at the time, and he just happened to be gay. So my family sent me to a gay therapist and didn't know it. So he helped me out a lot, and I've been looking for him. I looked for him when I got into recovery after all these things started to come out. I wanted to thank him, but I haven't been able to find him. But that's something I still hope to do one day, say thank you. So I went to college, decided that I was going to, I tried to get out of state. That didn't happen, so I settled on going to school in Georgia. And the man that who had molested me was still on the scene. He was a friend. And in college, it was actually my first week of college. It was freshman orientation, and my grandparents had given me supplies to take to my apartment, and I called him to ask him to take me. And that was a mistake, because at my apartment, he raped me. And it has taken me years to be able to say that out loud and not try to reframe it into something else. Because that was the first time that I thought something was wrong. That was the first time that I had believed that he had done something wrong. And what he told me was that, you know you want it. And from that moment on, I made a decision not to call the police, not to tell my family, because I was worried about what would happen to all of them. And he had two children. I was worried about their father being taken away from them. And I wasn't worried about myself. And so after this event happened, I actually went to freshman orientation. And I don't know how I sat there. I think I probably escaped. But after that event, I got into therapy and have stayed in therapy since. But my adventure into compulsive sex really took really escalated at that point. Here I was living in an apartment, going to school in a lot of pain. Had all this abuse had happened to me, and the internet was readily available. And so there were men coming left and right. Day, night, didn't matter. Didn't matter at all. Middle school, it didn't matter. I didn't matter. But somehow I managed to stay focused on my education. I started a LGBT student organization, became the president of that organization. But I was spiraling out of control. But something kept me grounded. And at the time, I didn't know it, but my higher power was with me. I didn't believe in God. I didn't believe in a power greater than myself at the time. But looking back, I realized that a higher power was right there with me the whole time. So I was able to show up for other people, but I still wasn't showing up for myself. In fact, I was doing more harm to myself than good. I got into my first real relationship with a man who was 10 years older than me, and that was very chaotic and dramatic, and it looked exactly like my mom's relationship. In fact, almost all of the relationships that I've had up until recently looked exactly like my mom's relationships. And I actually told her that a year ago, and she said, "I'm sorry." She didn't know. So I got in a relationship with a man who is he's bipolar. He was probably an under-earner. He and needed to be taken care of. And I took out loans in my name to take care of us. And I used my student loans to care for him, pay his child support. And he was abusive. And one time he tried to hit me and actually slammed his arm on the dresser instead of hitting me and broke his own arm. And I let him take himself to the hospital. You know, I was done. And so I actually stayed with him a little while longer until I could figure some things out. But during that time period, it was all going to hell in a handbasket. We got evicted. I moved into a place with my brother because I had my brother at that time. And our relationship ended. A year after that, I got into another relationship with a man who was 17 years older than me. I didn't realize that I was chasing this older man, this image of an older man that could take care of me. So I got into this relationship with a man, and that was chaotic. He had his own set of issues, but he was really invested in porn. And he surrounded our apartment in images of naked men and put them in picture frames, and I felt like shit. I was like, I didn't look like any of those guys. And he would sit next to me on the couch while we were watching TV, and he'd be looking at porn. And so I felt less than and less than. But as that was happening, and when he would leave to go to work for sometimes 32 hours, I was compulsively masturbating. I was looking at porn for hours and hours and hours. Days were going by. You know, I was hiding everything that I was doing, and our relationship was falling apart, and I was falling apart, and I turned into a person that I would not like. Now, I became an abuser, an abusive person. I became violent, breaking furniture and pictures, and I had a lot of anger. You know, I had a lot of anger. One time he told me, he says, I hate you. And I swiped my arm across, like, our pictures on our dresser, and they all shattered into pieces. That's how angry I was. And now looking back, I'm like, wow, that was a scary person. It was a very scary person. I took everything that I had witnessed, and I, like, balled it up until it came out. And it came out all over my relationships. But that was the person that brought me here to Seattle. He and I actually got married. And after I got out of grad school, we decided to move to Seattle. We moved to Seattle in 2009. We got here, and 2 weeks later, our marriage ended. So I was done. I was tired of the chaos in the relationship. I had no money. I had no job. I came to Seattle with $5,000. I just got out of grad school, load of debt, and knew only one or two people here. And so I struck up the internet, found men to hook up with, even while we were still living together. And he started doing the same thing. And that's what it continued to look like. I finally moved out. I met someone right after and got into another relationship, got engaged really fast, got married again. And this time, the person was 10 years older than me, and he said, I believe in you. I believe that you can be successful in your career. I'm a mental health therapist. And he said, I want to help you build your practice. So he invested all this money into me and made me feel very good, made me feel valid. I thought, oh, someone finally wants to take care of me. And so I bought into it hook, line, and sinker. And there was a lot of pain with that. There was a lot of pain sitting in this relationship and feeling as if I can't contribute and this one person is doing it all. And what he would tell me is, I want you a part of my life, so I'm going to do it all. But I later regretted that because he held it over my head the entire 4 years we were in a relationship. And it was very painful, very painful. I married an alcoholic. He also is a gambler. And soon after we got married, we discussed opening our relationship. I didn't know anything about open relationships until I moved here. And I kept meeting people who were in open relationships. And I wish I had never heard of open relationship because it was the gateway to hell for me. It really was. And so I escaped into sex. Sex was anyone that would have it with me. Didn't matter if I knew their name, no matter what they looked like, it just didn't matter. I was introduced to bathhouses and all these other things that I had no idea about, but I got caught up in it and I got lost. I got really lost and I was in a lot of pain because at home, my husband was a drunk and he was abusive and so I wanted to escape from him. And so in order to escape from him, I went to the bars and became drunk myself and hooked up with men. None of that made sense. None of it made sense. There were moments where I was drinking and driving. There were moments where I couldn't even drive home and had to stay in the bed with someone I didn't even know. And here I was expected to show up for other people in my job, and I was not showing up for myself. I didn't know how. I had no idea. I was leaving my coworkers at work in the middle of the day to go meet random people. They had no idea. But one thing I've learned is that after those things happened, I actually went back to work to tell them about it. That's how sick I was. I thought this was, like, exciting. I thought this was, like, something you shared with people. And it was not something that you shared with people. because they all knew I was sick, and they couldn't get through to me. And looking back, I realized that they tried. My colleagues tried. My friends, they tried. And I was not, I couldn't hear it. I just couldn't hear it. I was in a lot of pain. And while I was in a lot of pain, I tried to get him out of pain by getting him into rehab. So he got into rehab, and my job was done. I had nothing else to do. And so I spiraled even further. I began taking risks with my life by having unprotected sex, and that was the one thing that we agreed that we would not do. And that was my bottom. And I scraped the hell out of the ground. I really did. I felt like shit every moment of the day. And I remember there. I had one main qualifier who I thought was a friend. And I remember sitting him down at a Taco Bell telling him that I could no longer have sex with him, and I was crying as if someone had killed my dog. I was withdrawing. I was just like, this is sick. This is crazy. I can't not have sex with you. Right? And he didn't care. He didn't care at all. You know, I was just another conquest. He didn't really care about me. But here I was falling apart. And every time I had a conversation with someone that said, I can't have sex with you anymore, there was one more friend gone. Because they weren't really friends. They all walked away. I want to talk about my recovery. Because I entered recovery after having that unprotected sex. I started going to Codependence Anonymous. And I read their patterns and characteristics of codependency, and I checked off every single last one of those characteristics, every single last one. And that was scary. Here it was facing me, you know, and I thought someone had was following me throughout my life and had written that damn pamphlet about me. You know? I was looking for my name on it. And I had a good therapist, and he's like, every time I went to see him, he's like, go to a meeting. And I was like, I don't want to go to a fucking meeting. He's like, go to a meeting. And then when I started going to meetings, he said, get a sponsor. I'm like, what the hell is that for? I was really confused. I didn't understand what all this was about. And I remember, like, leaving his office, and he would say something. He said, process addiction. I know what that was. Here I am, I'm standing outside, I'm in downtown, and I'm on my phone, process addiction, trying to understand what the hell is he talking about. And I said, oh, wow, that sounds like what I have. And so I made a commitment to show up to my CODA meetings and do the work. I got a sponsor, and that person actually sponsored me in CODA and in SLAA. And you know, going through my history and identifying the patterns throughout my family and looking at how addiction had impacted almost every single person in my family was helpful for me. It was helpful to understand where I came from. It was helpful to understand that this was not intentional. This was a disease. This is a disease. It's a disease that I will have for the rest of my life, but I'm going to spend every single day making sure that I stay sober. And I have come to understand so much more about my family of origin, maybe more than they even know about themselves, because I've been asking the important questions, and they have had difficulty asking them of themselves. And so I don't shy away from talking about my recovery. Many of you probably are on my Facebook or something like that. I talk about recovery every day, all day, right? That's my life. My family sees it every day, and if they don't want to see it, they can unfriend me because it's my life. And so once it was clear to me that this was a disease and that I couldn't cure it all by myself, I worked the hell out of it. So I stumbled upon SLAA. I heard someone mention it in passing. I didn't even know my sponsor was in it. And he hadn't even mentioned it, I think because we were just really getting into the codependency stuff. So I walked into the noon meeting and sat down and read the 40 questions, and I answered yes to 38 of them. I left there in tears. And I had to go back to work and get my shit together so I could help somebody. But I was falling apart. I managed to do it, but it was very difficult. It was very difficult to have these realizations thrown at me, to know that it was not ideal for me to go have sex with strangers to make myself feel better. It was not ideal to stay up for 8 to 10 to 12 hours watching porn because I was bored, you know? And I made a commitment when I walked into the room to make myself a priority, and I didn't know what that meant, but I was going to try to figure it out. So I kept going to meetings, and when I first got into recovery, my sponsor said, I think you might need to take some time away from your husband. And I was like, well, I can't imagine doing that. We have a business together. We live together. How do I do that? Well, higher power was starting to show up, and it was clear to me that higher power was in my life. Once I came to understand that it wasn't the Baptist God, it wasn't the Christian God, it wasn't whoever's God, it was mine, I was able to start listening and paying attention to higher power's influence in my life. And so higher power cleared my schedule for me. And a silent retreat came up. And I went to that silent retreat, and it was with gay men. And I couldn't talk to them. I couldn't intrigue with them. I didn't know who they were. I didn't know what they did. I didn't know if they were in a relationship. I didn't know anything about them. And what I got to witness was my addict going insane. I heard every crazy thing that you can imagine in my head in that silence. And it was so painful. It was so painful to know, to finally get that I was spending almost every waking hour trying to get a fix off of somebody else. And so that experience, I say, changed my life. I got to hear the disease operating in silence, you know, and I made it through. I made it through, and I didn't act out. I didn't intrigue, didn't get any phone numbers, none of that stuff, right? And I even set myself up in a good way by carpooling with someone there, leaving my car at home so I couldn't escape. So I was learning. I was learning that I needed to protect myself. So I went to that retreat, and before I went, I had told my husband that I wanted to end the open relationship, and he had agreed. And so I now was really entrenched in my recovery. But the relationship started going south even more because he wasn't in recovery. He was just sober from alcohol. He hadn't shown up to the room to work the steps. He just went to outpatient treatment, and then he went to work and did whatever else. He wasn't invested in working the steps. And so that was different because here I was getting texts from my sponsor and calling my sponsor and calling people in the program, and he's like, you're not paying attention to me. And he used that as an excuse to go relapse and to run out and cheat on me and to gamble away $20,000 while I was getting sober and while I was trying to get my life together so I could show up for me and for him and everyone else and not lose everything, not lose my business, not lose my house. And so I started taking better care of myself while my relationship was falling apart, and that was okay. I let it be okay. I couldn't control it. So so working both programs was very challenging, but it was very necessary for me. It was necessary to see how the codependence was my root issue and how it informed my sexual acting out. And as the picture got clearer, I started loving myself even more because what I saw was a person who was in a lot of pain, and a person who was trying to find safety in all the wrong ways, but the best ways that I could. So I started to like myself. I started to appreciate myself. I started to love myself. And I did that with the help of my sponsor and everyone here, right? So I kept coming to meetings, and I set my bottom lines, and I've kept them. I've kept them. On October 1st, I had 3 years in this program. And this past year has been really challenging for me because I went through another divorce. I took myself on a little mini vacation and came home to find out that my husband was cheating on me. So I ended the relationship. I said I no longer can be with someone whose priority is not recovery. I have to make recovery my priority, and I need to be with someone who is making their recovery their priority. And that's not what I had. So it broke me down. I remember sitting on the floor in my kitchen screaming and yelling after I found out what had happened. And I called my best friend. I just said, come get me. He didn't know why. He probably couldn't understand what the hell I was saying on the phone, but he sure as hell showed up, right? Because that's what I have found here in this program is people that show up. So I've learned what healthy relationships look like because of all of you who show up. And I got myself out of that house, sold my house, I moved to the Central District, and I started focusing on getting my business in my hands and out of his hands. I took ownership, full ownership of my business. And I think I might have harmed myself a bit because I couldn't afford to go get an attorney to get a divorce. And so my ex-husband got a lot, and I got the business. And so I fought hard for that business, and I still believe in it. I still believe that there's a lot of work to be done because my focus in my business is helping other people like myself. So I help people in recovery, and that is important to me to not only do that as a sponsor, but also to do that as a therapist. So I fought hard for it, and I might have cost myself financially, but I believe that my higher power has me on the path to come out on the other side with abundance. So I keep showing up for the people in my life and doing the best that I can. Now what I'm doing is I'm working a hard program. In fact, I work three programs, and I have three sponsors. But higher power makes room for me to see my three sponsors and my three sponsees. Someone said today in a meeting, like, how does someone manage multiple programs? If you work hard enough, you can manage it. Because I spent so much of my time in my active addiction that I want to spend even more of my time in my recovery. Because that's what keeps me sober. So that's how I do it. And I have an online support. So I didn't have to take my computer out of my house or block or anything. What I did was I brought my recovery to my my online. And so on Facebook, they have recovery communities. And I actually run two of them. And I'm a member of maybe eight of them. You know, so when all the crazy is going on in my news feed, there's recovery going on at the same time. So I get to see the recovery, even through the crazy of my family and some of my friends. So that's been a big help to me. I have a really amazing relationship with my higher power. I have always been connected with nature, and when I was going on this path of trying to understand what higher power meant to me and what higher power would look like for me, one thing that kept coming up for me is my love for tigers. I love tigers. I have tigers all over my house. I have one on my leg. I have them everywhere. I have them on my shirt. I made this shirt. So I had to bring, you know, higher powers with me, but I had to put them close to me because today my chest was, like, beating like crazy. But I surround myself in recovery. Some of you may have seen some of my recovery tattoos. I have them all over me. When I'm struggling, I can just look down, you know. I have my bracelet here as recovery. Everything is recovery. And that's how I stay sober. Another way that I stay sober is surrounding myself in that recovery. In the last year, I have been I've been divorced about a year, and I was encouraged to do healthy dating. Didn't know what the hell that was. So I went and educated myself. I went and read articles. I went and looked at dating plans. And I combined, like, several plans into one and made one that fit me. And I had the help of my sponsor and people in recovery. And so I used that recovery dating plan, and I went on dates. I have brought dates to this meeting. And if they couldn't show up to this meeting, we stopped dating. Because recovery has to be a part of my relationship. And so when I go on dates, I tell people, the first thing I tell them is that I'm in recovery. Recovery is a priority. Recovery will stay a priority. If you can show up to my recovery and take care of yourself, then we can continue on dating. That's what I say. So there have been several people that have come to this meeting with me, and there have been several people I'm not dating. So I had to do that for myself. I have been, you know, with this program and with the recovery, I've been able to take healthier risks. And one of those risks happened several months ago when I met my now boyfriend. I met him, and I was scared, but I took a risk and asked him out. And it's been great. It's been great. You know, I used my dating plan, and I've been able to fall in love again. And it's healthy. And he's in recovery, and he works his program. And we both declared early on that our recovery was day number one for us. And so, no problem there. If you want to go to a meeting, you got to call a sponsor, a sponsee, I'll walk out. That's what I'll do, right? And that's what he does. And so I value that, and I value him. And let's see, what else? You know, I think that's about it. I think that that's all I really have to say about my recovery. I love recovery. I talk recovery. I live recovery. And I am grateful that all of you are part of my recovery. Thank you.